Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor with Professor H.J. McIntyre, Six Capital, Six Points of View, Beijing. Professor, I'm told that Xi Jinping does not take the president's phone call. What does that mean about Xi Jinping? And what does that tell us about the Chinese economy that now admits to 20% youth unemployment? Admits to it. And those numbers are untrustworthy.
Well, the Chinese economy now is in absolutely terrible shape. And people who are well informed in China know this. And people who spend any time walking around, the former shopping districts and so forth of the great cities, they know it. Many Chinese now have no source of income, and they live by going to the bank and taking out micro loans. You know, it's as if we went and took out a $100 loan for 3 weeks, something like that. And they're simply hoping that at some point something's going to appear so they don't have to do this. The banking system does not inspire confidence that this is a sustainable survival strategy in the long run. But China is really in desperate shape. Yet they have a leadership which has no patience with and no expertise in how to deal with foreign trade, how to deal with modern banking, how to deal with the modern economy, and is instead trying to go back to the way things were under Mao when the economy was absolutely a wreck. But Mao had tremendous power and prestige, and it is it's really quite a sickening spectacle. But Mr. Xi is of two minds. He wants to be loved, he wants to be hailed, he wants to be the greatest man in the world. You'll notice that the Chinese, when talking about the world, they always talk about the American-Chinese rivalry. There is no rivalry of the United States with China. I mean, China is one of a number of countries out there that we watch, but we're not afraid that somehow China, and if you've ever traveled much around China and then compare it even with the United States, they're a long way from reaching the level of economic strength, technological strength, military strength, intellectual strength, and so forth that we have. These may seem like strange things to be saying because I'm normally very critical of the way things are here, but they are much, much better here than they are for China. But Xi is status deprived, rather like a German Kaiser before World War I who had an arm that had not fully developed, and he was deeply concerned about his appearance. And the Brits, of course, who were very good at putting down people who were willing to be put down, constantly humiliated the Germans, and with the results that we saw. And I think that Xi is in that position now as well, because the West, the Japanese, gave a kind of a small, rather intimate, high-powered, people in the press that were on the radio have been saying that it was an actual conference. It wasn't a meal. They didn't go to Hiroshima for a meal, although it was a very good meal, but it was a kind of a modest meal, lots of local ingredients, you know, Japanese vintage wine and all the rest, that was the meeting. Whereas what Xi did was invite a lot of people he didn't know over to present themselves to him and then to sit so far away from him around this giant table that, as one person was saying, he needed binoculars to see who he was talking to, and then feed them a grotesquely dimensioned dinner. And nothing was, I don't think anything was accomplished. If anything, the seeds of suspicion were planted, and the realization began to dawn that there are thousands of miles of Eurasia that no one's really quite sure of for which people don't have a clear idea of what the right location is. We've got a lot of work to do if we're going to do that. But China is not, I don't know why Biden wants to talk to China. I would, if the Chinese didn't want to talk to me, I'd say, well, I'll just wait until they do, because sooner or later they're going to. I mean, you can't be a country in the modern world without having relations with the United States. But for Biden to feel that he's somehow going to push the ball forward by talking to China today, which has no clue what it's even doing with its own economy and society, is a very sad commentary on how well informed we are. If I were Biden, I suppose I'd spend a lot more time with the Australians, the Papua New Guineans, the Indians, the Pakistanis, the Burmese. There are all kinds of people, the Indonesians. I mean, Indonesia is a very important country. Sometimes a whole year goes by in which the word Indonesia never appears in a headline, say, in the New York Times, and the Indonesians all think that this is a plot, and it reflects a deep racial animus or something, but it's not. It's just good old America reporting on, lost dogs in the suburbs of New York, or as it is now, fentanyl and murders, and not reporting as much as we might on the workings of government, or on the workings of the international system.
Professor,
this is where we find ourselves.
Does Washington have a China policy that you can tell us in a paragraph?
Well, the answer is no. They have a series of points that they make, but these points don't connect with each other like gears. So you can say, well, we want to have intense competition with China, but we don't want to have potential military rivalry or something. And this is just this is double talk. I'd say that at root, Washington's China policy is the one that goes back to really to Richard Nixon and Kissinger, but was greatly pushed far too far by Brzezinski and Oxenberg and President Carter, which is that really the United States and China are made for each other. They're probably the worst dictatorship in human history, most unfree country, most surveilled country, cruelest police, et cetera, that they are somehow the obvious spouse or partner that destiny has ordained for the United States, which is a big, chaotic country full of incredibly smart and interesting people and criminals and crooks.
We have this headline, G7 issues strongest condemnation of China as it intensifies response to Beijing, G7. Is that significant on Xi? Is that what he's reacting to?
Xi is not reacting to that. No, that is the G7 reacting to Xi, because one of the things that's happened in the last couple of years is that China has become so careless and such a risk taker in creating hostile behavior. I mean, look at the way that Xi's been dealing with the Philippines, for instance. I mean, if Xi were setting about to have the Philippines become an enemy that was willing to blow itself up in a nuclear war as long as they could take China down with them, they have done it. But they do this by following contradictory policies, two contradictory policies at the same time. And what we do, instead of saying, this is stupid. You ought to either do A or do B. We say this shows their remarkable subtlety and their flexibility. In fact, it brings about disasters. I mean, one of the reasons that she is so mad is that Blinken didn't go for the trip back in February or whenever it was that he was supposed to go on, in which the Chinese expected him to bring cartloads of American money to bail them out. And even at that time, the Fed was passing dollars to the Chinese central bank, because keeping the dollar healthy is one of the highest priorities that we have. We say, oh, they're very subtle. They obviously, this is a, seems to be a contradiction, but really it's a kind of a Zen koan or something. It's a paradox. You have to understand. You have to realize that they're very, very deep thinkers. There's a woman who runs travel groups in China that I know who doesn't really speak Chinese, but she sort of does, and she understands the Chinese very well. And one day she said to me, listen, Mac, what's the story with, I'm told the Chinese are the most patient people in the world, and I'm told about how Zhou Enlai was asked about the effects of the French Revolution, and said too early to tell, and all of this claptrap that people believe about China. And she said, as far as I can see, they're the most impatient people in the world, and they change their policy about every 10 days. And this is just a good American girl from upstate New York. And she figured it out. That was that she understood far better than the people at State or at the CIA did, that it was a mistake to look for profundity in the management of Chinese foreign policy. Look at something like India policy. Was there anything more short-sighted that anyone's done than to humiliate India in 1962? Unless you think the Indians are so stupid they can't make an H-bomb. Well, as it turned out, by 1998 and before that, the Indians are surely smart enough, and they have the industrial capacity. They built nuclear weapons themselves, essentially with no foreign assistance. Arguably, we did the same thing, except that we had a large number of very, very brilliant Jewish refugees. Fermi's wife was Jewish, but otherwise they were all Jewish, who came over, who really were motivated to design a weapon that would get rid of Hitler and all the rest. So you can argue the Indians, I think if you didn't have the ringers from Europe coming over, we still could have done it, because there are and were very, very good just plain American physicists. But the Indians are quite remarkable, and I've spent some time with their nuclear physicists. And the Chinese, one of the most ill-judged things that anyone ever did was when China humiliated India in 1962, in order to be sure they had one more road to get their army into Tibet. That was what they were trying to do, and they made India hate them. And now the Indians are a peer competitor with them militarily.
Right. They've got two armies, about 10,000 each, and the high Himalayas faced off with each other in the event of a crisis elsewhere.
That's right.
In Asia. And AUKUS is Australia, the UK, and the US, and the Quad is India, Japan, and the US and Australia. And what we have here is a situation where China has alienated the whole neighborhood.
It's quite astonishing.
Yes, and so we need to move to one more capital, where the headline is very fetching: "How Japan Got Its Swagger Back."
Which newspaper is that from?
The FT, of course, the pink one. This is the Friends.
I should have been able to tell. Yeah,
H.J. Mackinder, International Relations, the Friends of History Debating Society. We're headed to Tokyo and Hiroshima for the G7 meeting. But more than that, there is reason to believe that Prime Minister Kishida is in charge of the defense of Asia. This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor. Moto Casino. Oh.
America's Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Lots of places can expose you to identity theft. That's why LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. If we find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, we alert you right away, all through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Save up to 30% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
You clocked out just as hunger clocked in. Why not answer the call and make a pit stop on your drive home? Go big or go home at 7-Eleven with their boneless wings tossed in hot honey sauce with a spot-on sweet and spicy combo. It's available at 7-Eleven and just $5 with 7 rewards. Visit your local Columbus 7-Eleven and satisfy that craving today. Valid through 6/23/26. While supplies last, participating stores see app for full terms.